now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara. On today's show, Queer Story brings us the history behind the film Mad Fabulous.
And Lisa Baker, writer of that said film Mad Fabulous, talks to me all about the film.
All today
on a Mad Fabulous Shout Out.
Just got my heart broken, but I look way too fabulous. Yeah, I'm back in therapy, but I look way too fabulous.
Hey. Mad Fabulous. No, it's a song I'm actually playing later on in the show. It's just, it's really Mad Fabulous.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you remember, it was there when we were. I'll play the whole thing later. Would you rather have your normal opening, would you?
No, that's all right. I thought you were shifting up.
Were you being dirty-minded then?
Sorry,
she said
I laughed.
Shifted it up.
Oh no, I heard what she said.
That was a good cover-up for pushing the wrong button, Andy.
No, I didn't.
Pretending
that.
Yeah, it was, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's Mad Fabulous. It's supposed to be like, you know, off the cuff. And so, if you have no idea what we're talking about, we're talking about the film Mad Fabulous, which comes out.
No, we're talking about me.
Week.
I'm mad, and I'm
you are mad. You are fabulous. Yeah, that just happens to be a coincidence. Oh dear, we're on form today.
We
think you'd be practicing in the car on the way here.
Yeah, we have. All of us.
All afternoon.
In a really small car.
It's the heat, isn't it? We're now in the air conditioning and we're going to get.
It is a really, really fun show tonight, but also it's some incredible history to be told.
Oh, yes.
I heard somebody wrote a Queer Street piece.
Yeah, and as amazing a job you did of it, there's no way you could fit all of the history of what you did into.
Absolutely not.
That period of time. They don't even manage it in the film.
Short life as well.
I mean, my first draft was 20 odd minutes.
Oh, was it? Oh, God.
Yeah. I think it brought it down to 12. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't easy. You're right. Exactly.
There's
that.
Loads of it.
So much.
Yeah.
But we've got
a Queer Story, so we're kicking things off. Ez is going to tell you all about the actual history of it. And you get a bit of it later as well, because when I talk to Lisa, she says about some of the artistic license that they had to use. And the like, but it was really nice. It was ever so nice for her to come chat. So
yeah, it was also about the erasure of queer history, probably in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, I did ask her about that because there is a big thing about, you know, we went through a period of time where homosexuality was hated, let alone anything else. They just literally went and rewrote all the history books and took it all out.
Was it the time when S&M came into creation as well?
What do you mean came time? Into creation?
Well, there was
The Marquis de Sade is where we get the name sadism from. He was a French aristocrat who supported the revolution of 1789.
Right, so it's Venderian.
Okay. Oh, right. And masochism comes from Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, who was a pulp fiction writer some 50 years later, so about 1850.
Okay, so that's all a little bit earlier than this.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day. You are like just like a fountain of
the
knowledge.
Oracle.
It's like the Matrix. It's like having Wikipedia but in person.
Wikipedia.
Don't need everything to be
Terrypedia.
AI yet.
Yeah.
Terrypedia.
He does have the most incredible fountain of knowledge.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
Yes, and the most amazing ability to read the news with the biggest tongue twisters in it and make it sound normal.
Yes.
And then you give one of his scripts to someone else to read. And he's like,
I've lost it a few times.
Don't look at me. I had a bad week 2 weeks ago. I'm in therapy. I am.
It happens to us all.
Let's normalise therapy.
Steph had one news where, oh dear, God.
What news?
The medical
about
one.
Robert Gilbraith.
No, the medical one.
No, we were all about reading the news. So
yeah.
You weren't listening, were you? You were reading your phone.
She's looking at cars. I've heard all this show before.
Wow.
That's what happens with age.
Yes.
Well, you forget things.
Yeah. You think you've heard it before.
She probably has if it's come from me.
You know I'm a Time Lord, right? And I have my own TARDIS and two hearts.
I have heard that.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Two hearts.
Yeah.
Sorry, hearts.
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 Yeah.
Hearts.
Do you know I have terrible trouble with Siri?
With Siri?
Yeah.
Does that not understand you?
He doesn't understand Bristolian.
If you say, all right, my love, he won't do anything. You have to say, all right, Siri.
Yeah, Siri.
Yeah,
it's
terrible.
Can you get I home?
Doesn't understand it. No. It's like a foreign language to Siri.
Yeah, get me to Astles, that's what you said.
On New Year's Eve, Tara played us a sketch about two Scottish gentlemen, first broadcast on BBC Scotland.
Seven. 11.
And they asked for 11.
11.
You know, it's a Scottish accent. And
it's about voice recognition and being Scottish.
That went viral, didn't it, on the internet?
It's a very funny sketch.
Some brilliant videos of children in Scotland and, well, all over the world, actually, who have got strong accents. And Alexa just doesn't understand them. No. And they just get more and more cross. And then suddenly Alexa will answer, but doing something completely opposite of what they've asked for.
Alexa's okay with me.
Keep saying it, and there's people with the radios on now go, shush, stop saying the wake word.
What? Alexa.
Alexa.
This is true. This is true.
You have to ask her to play you a silly song.
Yes. I like to say...
I warn you, you have to turn the device off and on again to get it to stop.
Really?
Yeah. It sings, I know a song that will get on your nerves. And it doesn't stop.
Is that one of those?
If you say the wake word followed by sing me a silly song, that's what she'll sing. And she won't stop until you'd physically go and bow on the dance.
Is that one of the secret eggs that they sometimes
have? Yeah, they do have secret eggs.
Is that Hey Siri or Amazon? Alexa.
It's the Alexa one, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I don't like that.
Sing me a silly song.
Shall we? No, don't say it. You just did all over, didn't you?
All over the region.
Lost all the clients.
I am so sorry. If any of you now have to go and power your devices to get them to come back to life. So, right, why don't we go reprimand Steph and tell her she's a very, very naughty girl. Have a listen to this queer story with the lovely S.
Hello and welcome back to Queer Story. Today we're doing something a little different. Today we're talking about a man who converted a chapel into a theatre, wore transparent silk robes to shimmy like a butterfly and blew through the equivalent of roughly £70 million before he was 30 years old. His name was Henry Cyril Paget. He was the 5th Marquess of Anglesey. His friends called him Toppy, and he was without question one of the most spectacularly glorious, unapologetically himself people to ever walk through Victorian Britain. And now, he's getting a film. It's called Mad Fabulous. It's already been described as a wildly original and emotionally rich film. It stars BAFTA winner Callum Scott-Howes, Ruby Stokes, and the legendary Rupert Everett. And if you haven't heard about it yet, well, stick around, because by the end of this episode, you absolutely will want to see it. Let's start at the beginning. Picture this, 1898. Queen Victoria is still on the throne. The British Empire is at its swaggering peak. Class, rank, and the decorum are practically enforced by law. And into this buttoned-up world steps a 23-year-old aristocrat who has just inherited one of the great fortunes in Britain. Henry was born in 1875 in France, which was fitting, given everything that followed. His mother died when he was just 2 years old. There are rumours, never quite confirmed, that he spent part of his early childhood in Paris, possibly raised near the French theatrical world, and whether or not that's entirely true, something about young Henry clearly absorbed all the drama, the performance, yes, the theatre of it. He attended Eton, as you'd expect, for a Marquess in waiting. He was commissioned as a lieutenant in the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. He even got married in January 1898 to his cousin Lillian. All very proper. Except it wasn't, really. The marriage was later annulled on the grounds of non-consummation, and his wife obtained divorce. She reportedly disapproved of his lifestyle, to put it mildly. Because in October 1898, Henry inherited everything, and everything turned out to be a lot. We're talking approximately 30,000 acres of land across Staffordshire, Dorset, Anglesey and Derbyshire, an annual income of £110,000. That's the equivalent of around £12 million a year in today's money. He had the family seat, the grand estate of Plasnewydd on the island of Anglesey in North Wales, one of the most beautiful stretches of coastline in Britain. A sensible man might have invested it, a conventional nobleman might have renovated the stables and attended a lot of shooting parties, but Henry did neither. The first thing he did was rename it. He called it Anglesey Castle. Then he converted the chapel, into a 150-seat private theatre, which he named the Gaiety Theatre. He filled it with electric stage lighting, he hired a theatre company, he cast himself in the lead roles, and, oh, he performed. Not tucked away for a private audience of toffs either, by 1901 the Gaiety Theatre was open to the public. Henry Paget performed Oscar Wilde's An Idle Husband, he performed Shakespeare, he did pantomime and comedy, he did song and dance numbers. And then, just to make sure no one could miss him, he took his entire theatre company on tour around Britain and Europe for 3 years. Now, here's where it gets even more interesting, because Henry wasn't just an enthusiastic amateur putting on a few shows. No, no. He had a signature performance, and it was called the Butterfly Dance. And he'd taken inspiration from the legendary American performer Louis Fuller, a genuine icon of the era who revolutionised dance with light and movement. Henry's version involved a voluminous robe of transparent white silk waved like wings. His body became the stage. His movement was the art. In Victorian England, in front of crowds, here he was. The press were fascinated, journals described him with a mixture of bewilderment and barely disguised awe. One journalist wrote that he seemed like a man who ought to have been born a woman, meaning it probably is a put-down. But reading today is something closer to recognition. Scholars and historians who have studied his life have concluded that Henry must be included in any honest history of gender identity. He cross-dressed. He rejected the expected performance of masculine aristocracy. He created his own performance instead, one that was joyful and expressive and entirely, defiantly his. Was he gay? Almost certainly. Many historians believe so. Was he gender non-conforming in a way that would have had language today that it didn't have then? Yes. His family, after his death, destroyed many of his personal papers. The ones that might have settled questions like these. Make of that what you will. What we do know is that Henry lived out loud at a time when the world was telling people like him to live in silence. Now, you might be thinking, okay, he was dramatic and fabulous and ahead of his time, but what about the money? Well, let's talk about it, because honestly, the spending is almost as performative in the art in its own right. He bought jewellery, spectacular quantities. He bought furs. He threw extravagant parties. He funded his theatre company at enormous personal cost. He mortgaged his estates to raise cash. He kept spending when money was running out. He borrowed, and then he borrowed more. And then, in September 1901, while he was out attending the London premiere of Arthur Conan Doyle's stage adaptation of Sherlock Holmes, because of course he was there, his French valet, Julian Galt, robbed him. Stole jewellery worth £50,000. Distraught, Henry enlisted the help of Arthur Conan Doyle himself to track the jewels down. The valet was eventually arrested at Dover, pleaded guilty at the Old Bailey, and was sentenced to 5 years in prison. The jewellery, apparently taken to France by a mysterious woman called Matilda, was never recovered. It was a fittingly theatrical disaster. By the time Henry died, penniless in Monte Carlo on the 14th of March 1905, he was 29 years old. He had accumulated debts of £544,000, somewhere in the region of £70 million today. The family had to sell almost everything, the estates, the jewels, the costumes, the theatre fittings. Auction catalogues from the sale of his belongings run to hundreds and hundreds of lots. One period historian wrote, with almost Victorian primness, that Paget seems only to have existed for the purpose of giving a melancholy and unneeded illustration of the truth that a man with the finest prospects may, by the wildest folly and extravagance, play away an unnutable life and have lived in vain. With respect to that historian, he's wrong. Henry did not live in vain. He lived loudly. And over a century later, people are still talking about him. Which brings us to Mad Fabulous. The film has been a long time coming, and in the best of ways. It's directed by Kellen Jones, a Welsh filmmaker whose previous work includes The Almond and The Seahorse, and who grew up on Anglesey. This is genuinely a hometown story for him. The screenplay is written by Lisa Baker, an Anglesey native herself, in her feature film debut, and it's produced by Jones's company Mad as Birds, and is supported by the Welsh Government via Creative Wales. The film was chosen by the British Council and the BFI as one of their Great Eight projects showcased at Cannes in 2025. It's been picked up for international sales by Upgrade and the Gersh Agency and has serious pedigree. It has a phenomenal cast. Callum Scott Howes plays Henry. You'll know him from It's a Sin, Russell T Davies' devastating and brilliant Channel 4 drama about the AIDS crisis, a role that earned him a BAFTA Wales win and a BAFTA nomination. He's 25. He has what the director calls rockstar appeal. When the casting was announced, Howes posted on Twitter, excited for this one. He's also said it's a real honour to be portraying Henry in this great story about the man and everything he represented. He is such a fascinating character, truly a rebel ahead of his time, and has been an inspiration to many artists throughout the years. Ruby Stokes, brilliant in Lockwood & Co. and Rocks, plays Lily, Henry's best friend and platonic muse, and the wonderful Rupert Everett plays Gellert, Henry's loyal servant. The film had its premiere in March 2026, and the way it's been described as an alternative period drama and fantastical retelling reimagined with wit and wonder suggests this isn't going to be a stiff, polite historical biopic. This is going to be a celebration, and that word matters, celebration. Because here's the thing about Henry Paget that gets lost when people just focus on the scandal and the bankruptcy. He wasn't tragic in the way his contemporaries wanted him to be. He wasn't a cautionary tale. He was someone who had been handed enormous privilege and instead of using it to reinforce the structures of power and class and rigid gender expectations that he'd been born into, he pointed it at joy, at art, performance and self-expression. He built a theatre in a chapel. Think about what that means symbolically, converting a space of religious obligation and social conformity into a space of creativity and play. He dressed in silk and danced in public. He performed Oscar Wilde at a time when Wilde himself was on trial. He refused at every turn to be who the aristocracy expected him to be. And yes, it cost him everything. But history, the honest version of history, looks back at him not with pity, but with something more like recognition. Here was a person who simply insisted on being himself loudly and colourfully in a world that had absolutely no framework to accommodate him. That's not folly, that's courage. So here's why Mad Fabulous feels so timely. We live in a moment where questions of identity, gender, self-expression, and the right to simply be are still contested and still politically charged. Henry died in 1905, and yet the things that made him extraordinary, his refusal to conform, his insistence on performance and flamboyance and joy, his defiance of what a man of his class was supposed to be, to feel urgently, painfully, beautifully contemporary. A film that takes that story and tells it with wit and wonder, and a BAFTA-winning lead shot on the very island where it happened, with Welsh creative talent at its heart. That feels like exactly the kind of film the world needs right now. The producers described Mad Fabulous as a riotous, uncompromising celebration of flamboyance, relationships, rebellion, and blind generosity in the pursuit of love and applause. Love and applause. That's what Henry was after, wasn't it? He just wanted to perform to be seen. He just wanted to be himself, dressed in silk, lit by electricity on a stage he built in a chapel on a beautiful Welsh island. He got the applause, and he's still getting it 120 years later. So, if you want to catch Mad Fabulous, and honestly, why wouldn't you? It's out in UK cinemas from the 5th of June, distributed by Icon Film Distribution, so keep an eye out on the Maddest Bird social channels for further international release dates. And if you want to visit the real estate where Henry turned a chapel into a theatre and scandalised half of Anglesey, it's now managed by National Trust and open to the public. They celebrate his legacy there, as they should. Henry Civil Paget. Nicknamed Toppy, known as the Dancing Marquess, broke, brilliant, and beautifully, irreversibly himself. Mad Fabulous? Absolutely. And that brings me to the end of this queer story. I will be back very soon.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's Runway. Lady Gaga and Doechii, I think is how you pronounce it. That's from Devil Wears Prada 2, which I still haven't seen, actually. It's supposed to be really, really good. Yeah.
Are you eating something?
I was, sorry, yeah. I didn't quite finish it before I went on air.
And what are you eating?
It's sugar. A freeze-dried, crunchy sugar ring.
A crunchy ring.
Yeah, turns his tongue blue.
Ah.
Yes, yeah, one of them blue raspberry things. A bit sticky around your teeth than you thought, and I couldn't get it out before we had to go on there.
Are you sure you haven't been licking the mic muff?
Well, I couldn't use my tongue in it, couldn't I?
Because you're quite close to it.
Yeah. Speak of the devil.
We've got coughing problems over this side of the desk, haven't we?
Yes.
Just that side. Coughing problems.
One has to excuse oneself.
Get one to fit.
Sorry, I was just clearing my throat.
Are you doing the news as well?
La 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 la. Yeah, but I'm going to sing it.
You're going to sing it?
Yeah, because I'm mad fabulous.
Take it away.
Okay.
I knew you would.
I was waiting for the jingle.
The first story would go down very well sung, I think.
You and me there. No, I don't think I'll sing it today, because
especially not the first one. It's a little bit too serious to sing.
I need to prepare oneself if one's going to be that level of performative.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm at like level 6 now.
Can we challenge you for next week then?
All right.
You sing the news.
How about
bring it on?
How about when we compile a special news like at Christmas or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I sing it by myself.
Well, I'll sing it with you.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. We did it once with donuts in our mouth.
This is shout out news.
Yeah, we made you, every time you read a song, we made you take another. Every time you read a story, we made you take a bite of donut, didn't we?
It was me and Kevin, I think, was it?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I think the funniest one was when Martin Spilacy did the news in Polari.
Oh.
And he got one sentence in, and no joke, most people had to leave the studio because they were laughing so loudly.
Did he write the whole thing in Polari?
He wrote the whole thing in Polari.
That's incredible, though. What a feat.
If you never heard Polari, look it up. It's it's quite an old language, and a lot of the slang from it actually is in English language. Mm-hmm. Now, but when it was very much used, wasn't it? It dates back to Romany days.
It's an argot. It's like a Creole for gay men.
Yeah.
It was used in the period when homosexuality was totally illegal between 1885 and 1967. Parts of it come from gypsy backslang, parts of it from Yiddish, parts of it from thieves' cant, and from the sort of the circuses and that kind of industry.
In the theatre
world. Absolutely fascinating. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
It was used in maritime stuff for quite a long time.
Yeah, and words like naff, cod, when you say like cod sympathy or something like that, you know, all of those words originate in Polari.
Mm. Yeah, so you can imagine how funny it was when Martin did it. Perhaps we'll have to look up. There is a Polari day. Perhaps we'll have to see the closest show, and we'll do something.
Yes.
Anyway, shall we get some English news?
All right,
we'll try.
So, are you genuinely doing the news as well? Are you?
I am indeed.
You're cool, marvellous. Okay, here we go.
This is Shoutout News, 28th of May 2026. Welcome along.
Q Voice News and The Advocate both report that LGBTQ health advocates are responding quickly to outbreaks of drug-resistant Shigella, which is increasingly affecting gay and bisexual men. Dr. Carlton Thomas, a gastroenterologist and host of the But Honestly podcast, told The Advocate that he fell seriously ill after a trip to Fort Lauderdale. He described bloody diarrhoea, dehydration and a temperature of 104 degrees Fahrenheit before receiving treatment with azithromycin, which resolved his symptoms within 24 hours. Shigella spread through fecal contamination, including via rimming and other oral anal contact. A drug resistant strain is now believed to be reported more frequently amongst men who have sex with men, according to the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis says that higher cases of numbers in queer men reflect both sexual networks and better access to testing, whilst underdiagnosis and stigma hide cases from other groups. He stresses that people do not need to stop having sex, but should understand the routes of transmission, test when needed, and reduce the onward spread. For more information, visit Q Voice News online.
The Washington Blade reports that the U.S. House of Representatives has passed H.R. 2616, the Stopping Indoctrination and Protecting Kids Act, which critics have labelled a Don't Say Trans bill. The legislation would require schools to obtain parental permission before using a student's chosen name, pronouns, or gender marker, and would penalise schools that teach what the bill calls gender ideology. It aligns with President Trump's Executive Order 14168, which directs federal agencies to recognise only sex assigned at birth. Opponents warn the bill would forcibly out trans students, placing some of them at risk of harm. Tyler Heck of the Christopher Street Project, PAC, told The Blade, young people deserve the space to figure out who they are without the federal government interfering in their lives. The bill now moves to the Senate, where it will require 60 votes to pass.
The Iris Prize LGBTQ Film Festival has once again been recognised by Movie Maker magazine as one of the 50 festivals worth the entry fee for 2026, the sixth time it has earned this accolade. Festival director Ballerin Rowland says filmmakers often comment that attending Iris feels like being a member of an extended family. The festival returns for its 20th edition from the 12th to the 18th of October with a limited time 30% discount on weekend passes. The Iris Prize remains the world's largest LGBTQ short film award, offering £40,000 to create a new queer-themed film in the UK.
Recent updates to the UK government's guidance on gender pay gap reporting state that employers with more than 250 staff are now expected to record and report employees' birth sex for mandatory submissions. HR and payroll specialists note that this would require employers to hold information that many trans people have not previously been required to disclose, including those with a gender recognition certificate. Experts say the guidance may be difficult to implement in practice. Payroll systems typically cannot store multiple legal definitions of sex for different purposes, and the guidance suggests limiting access to this information to a single staff member, something many organisations say is not technically feasible. Critics argue the change risks creating confusion for businesses and may place trans employees in a vulnerable position. The government says the update is intended to improve consistency in reporting.
Several human rights organisations say concerns continue around the Equality and Human Rights Commission's approach to trans rights. The Labour government recently returned the EHRC's draft single-sex guidance for further review after campaigners warned it could make life easier to exclude trans people from services such as refuges, changing rooms and hospitals. Former commissioners and staff have previously resigned, citing what they call as political interference. Groups including Stonewall, the Good Law Project and the Trans Plus Solidarity Alliance argue the Commission's direction has been shaped by external pressure groups. The EHRC says its work remains impartial and claims that it is grounded in equality law.
According to reporting by The Guardian and Open Democracy, the campaign group Sex Matters has continued to lobby the UK government for more restrictive rules on trans people's access to single-sex services and legal recognition. The group has submitted evidence calling for what it describes as stricter boundaries based on sex assigned at birth. Human rights organisations argue these proposals would significantly reduce existing protections for trans people and go beyond what the Equality Act currently allows. Sex Matters says its position is based on its interpretation of safeguarding and legal clarity.
Workplace design bodies in HR industry are reporting that more UK employers are moving towards gender-neutral toilet facilities with fully enclosed floor-to-ceiling cubicles. Designers say the shift is driven by a desire to improve privacy, reduce complaints and avoid being drawn into ongoing political disputes about toilet access. The Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development says employers increasingly prefer solutions that work for everyone rather than policies that single out particular groups. Advocates for inclusive design argue that these layouts reduce conflict and provide greater dignity and safety for all employees.
And that's Shoutout News for this week. We'll have more next time, but in the meantime, why not check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr
and Ezra Peregrine.
Shout out news.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
See, I purposely kept to the bum 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 bum. Not the. It's so hard not to do it.
I thought I'd wait until we got to the instrumental bit at the end. Because that last time I played that song, I put the mic up, you blew my ears.
I did. Yeah. I got paid £50
for
everyone in the room to do that.
And you came back again.
such a great track, just generally. But
That's the Sam Smith version.
It is.
That's called I Feel Love. And Terry, you were saying that it was the original, which was Donna Summer.
Donna Summer in 1976.
Was one of the first ever ones with a beat that was synthesised.
One of the originators of what later became house music, what was disco music at the time.
House music.
But apparently Brian Eno from Roxy Music got a copy of the tape and took it to David Bowie and said, listen to this, David, this is the future of music. And David Bowie said, yeah, absolutely right, this is how music's going to sound in 50 years' time. And it kind of was true.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal piece of music.
It's mad, the number of dance and club songs in the 90s that were all done on the same keyboard.
Yeah.
Synth. If you go by it, you can play all the different instruments. Like, oh my god, I recognise that from this song and that song. And, yes. You know, YouTube is a great resource for seeing things like that too.
Yeah.
So. Now, Mad Fabulous, out in cinemas next week. Before I tell you a little bit about it, would you like to hear the trailer?
Go on, then.
Please.
When you've seen one lord, you've seen them all.
There he is.
Oh lord, welcome to Anglesey Castle.
Bonjour, my dirty darlings.
He is now head of this household.
Hello!
One lump or two, dear. What?
Sir, you are complete. Your bizarre situation is causing tongues to wag.
It is not done.
Lord Paget, you're disgustingly wealthy.
How disgusting?
And if I spent it all, you couldn't if you tried. Who wouldn't want to live in a dream, sir? Trouble with dreams is we have to wake up from them.
What is your issue with me? What is it?
Oscar Wilde rots in Reading Jail for similar theatrical debauchery.
He did this to himself. This bad behaviour.
Bad behaviour? You are in danger of losing the entire Paget fortune.
Enchanté. I would look gorgeous in that.
Henry Paget!
Always be true to yourself.
Self, everyone else is taken. Fabulous.
Mad Fabulous.
Mad Fabulous. Mad Fabulous, yeah. Yeah, it's not easy because, of course, I mean, a lot of trailers are very visual, but that does give you some kind of an idea, especially with the opening when he goes, hello!
That's a fantastic trailer because I think sometimes audio trailers, you can't really picture the film, but I think that they captured that really well because
it is an emotional roller coaster, isn't it? Of a film,
it is.
You know, and you'll hear it in a minute because we'll hear from Lisa Baker who wrote it. There is some artistic license because you kind of have to in a movie, else it would have been like about 5 hours long
or 10.
I mean, to be fair, it actually would probably still be a really good movie. So, but it does open literally with him sailing up to Anglesey Castle, on a boat in a dress with pearls,
maroon dress,
big maroon dress, and that literally is how it starts the whole movie. And it is very much of that time where if you've seen Bridgerton and you know the Ton and the like, it's
compliance
kind of era. She must everything's all about being prim and proper, and he's
he did go to Eton.
He's the complete opposite,
yeah,
you know.
Well, because he came from France to the UK.
Yes, yes.
And he'd lived a very interesting life over there, hadn't he?
He has, yes. Think Moulin Rouge is the best way I can describe it. That's what his mother did.
He was a sort of wonderful theatre kid, but it sounded like the way it read when I was reading about his history, that he lived in a place where he could actually express himself and then came over to the UK. I'm not going to tone it down. I'm just going to be even more fabulous.
Isn't that a bit deja vu at the moment with the UK?
Sorry. Yes. Well, I mean, it's a beautiful one, and the whole film is Welsh made as well, which is brilliant. Yeah. I'm part Welsh myself, so I'm a little bit proud, you know. A lot of it is recorded on Anglesey, and even one of the descendants is in the film.
Yeah. And there was like a common line, isn't it?
This is all mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because if you watch the film or listen to the queer story, my goodness, did he spend?
He spends a lot of money. It was incredible.
Yeah.
I was very lucky. I couldn't catch Callum Scott Howell. He literally ran out the room. I was so it's such a shame because he's so different. Because of course he's Welsh as well, and he doesn't have a Welsh accent. He plays his character so well. But he did hang around at the end, and they did a brief like Q&A, didn't they? With Berwyn and the like. But I managed to catch up with Lisa Baker afterwards, who wrote it. Have a listen to this. So I'm very kindly joined by the writer of Mad Fabulous, the amazing Lisa Baker.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So just watch the film. A staggering film. Firstly, congratulations, because I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Even had me in tears at the end.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
I have to admit, I saw the trailer and I assumed it was going to be a comedy.
I know, I wrote the script and I thought it was going to be a comedy as well, actually. It's interesting how it plays, because it's actually a really tragic story. And I knew that at the start. I knew the guy, the fact that Henry died at 29 was one of the first bits of information I had. But I'm quite camp at heart, and I really leaned into the joyous, the lively parts of Henry's personality. And I did a lot of research about the illness. Consumptives have these periods where they have loads of energy, and they're full, you know, and they can be quite crazy and extra, and then they go into a slump and they might take to their bed for some weeks. And so that's kind of how the script evolved. But yeah, it now plays, because I think in the filming, Kellen realised that the one word story of the film is love.
Right.
And it's a tragic love story, you know, and all various characters are wanting love and needing love and not getting the love they want, or feeling love but maybe from the wrong quarters.
So did he genuinely actually marry his first cousin?
He did, yeah. So his father and Lily's mother were siblings.
Right.
And so he wasn't, he didn't really know his father very well. So yeah, they were absolutely first cousins, and even in those days it was really not the thing to marry your first cousin, even in aristocracy where different rules apply, you know, it was not the done thing. So the fact that he did that was just another on the big list of things that Henry did that were wrong or against the ideals of the time or against the rules of society, if you like.
I was going to say, I mean, out of all the things he did, that actually becomes quite a minor part compared to some of them. So was it intentional to cover something that's historical? Because it's very common where homosexuality and the like has, you know, pretty much been washed out of existence through certain periods of time. There's lots of things people don't know, like, for example, William Shakespeare was bisexual and had a boyfriend.
We found out.
But all these things get rewritten to suit the time. So when homosexuality wasn't okay, you never saw it all. So is it kind of nice to bring something that's genuine and with a bit of artistic license, but still a true story, back to the screen?
Yes, absolutely. He was erased, you know, he was consciously erased by his family. They felt a deep, profound shame about him. And so all of his papers and documents, it's known that they were burned by a family member after he died.
That's why there was no diary for...
Yes, for Callum to refer to.
I see.
So what what I did find, a wonderful quote which he used on the wedding night in the film. He says, "I have an addiction to jewels which I am powerless to resist." So I think that tells us something. You know, this was said by a guy in the 1890s to his wife. That's an interesting point. We know he liked to dress as his favourite queen, Queen Eleanor of Aquitaine, and he had a beautiful ringlety wig made, and there are photographs of this. But he kept his moustache on, and this was a really elaborate gown. I'll show you a picture. So we had these scraps of evidence that this is not your typical guy. He brought theatre to the island of Anglesey. It didn't exist before. These were God-fearing Baptist chapel attendees. You know, so he introduced not just the island theatre, but he invited in the rustic locals, the tradesmen, the farmers, and gave them the finest wines alongside our aristocracy and other people. So he was behaving in all sorts of ways which were controversial. And yes, I do believe he's a queer icon who was erased, not just because he was profligate and spent the money, but because he behaved in a way that the people surviving him couldn't deal with. So it's very, very important to shine a spotlight on Henry again and celebrate him, because he's so very 2026. And many of his behaviours today would be seen as perfectly reasonable and rational and completely accepted by society. But the beautiful thing was he was doing all of these, and I believe he didn't see any barriers. I don't think he was overtly trying to break rules. I think he just lived in a very free way where he didn't see any boundaries.
Because your story is he's come from France, and obviously yes. We know from films like Moulin Rouge that there yes. was that kind of thing. Is that the history of kind of where he was brought up?
Yes, so that is the truth. So he was raised in France. His mum was actually Australian, and they were raised in a theatrical environment. He was raised in a theatrical environment. His mother died when he was 2, so we've played with the timelines a bit. He was raised by his aunt until he was 8, again in this theatrical environment in Paris. And then he was sent to Anglesey, and he just had this very stern Scottish governess, and it was a very cold, very devoid of love and life environment. And the boy was so desperate for love and affection that every time he went on a walk with his governess, if he found a wounded animal, he would bring it home. So the real Henry had a menagerie, from birds with broken wings to a donkey that he brought home one time. So these are stories we couldn't tell in this telling, but you can see from that behaviour that he's a person who wants to love and be loved. And I think that tells us something again about Henry. You know, he's been called a narcissist by other people in the media. But I think he was the opposite. I think he was someone who was very vulnerable and really wanted to be loved and needed love, but didn't get it quite in the way that he wanted.
If there's one thing you'd like the audience to take away from watching the movie, what would it be?
Well, we borrow from Oscar Wilde quite a lot, and the line which we use on our poster is "Be yourself, everyone else is taken." And I really like that, because I think it's so valid and contemporary. And my version of that was when Henry's mother says to him, "Be true to yourself, just be you." And he says, "I don't know how to be a lord, you know, and I don't know this other land, and I don't want to go without you. What am I going to do?" And she says, "Just be true to yourself." And I think that applies to all of us. If we dig deep enough in any situation, we know how to respond. We might not follow that instinct because of fear or shame or whatever, but I think we always do know our truth inside, and, you know, we can't always reveal it because we don't always feel safe to do so. Yeah.
So it's coming out nationally?
Yes.
When's it due out?
On 5th of June, coming out nationwide. Very exciting.
Cool. Is this first film for you going national?
Yes, this is my first film to make it all the way to market, all the way. So I've been working on lots of other projects over many years, but something always drops out. Somebody leaves the project, or the funding doesn't quite complete, or so this for me is really, really exciting.
I have to say, having seen it, big congratulations, because I thought it was a phenomenal movie. It's so lovely. See, it's one of the things we love about the festival as well, is seeing that pure talent turned into something that looks like a multi-million pound film that you see out of Hollywood. And it's not. This was obviously Welsh production.
Yes, yeah. Independent Welsh cinema. I wrote a script which should have cost £50 million to produce. And then Kellen had the great job of managing to do that on a significantly smaller budget. And I think he's done a wonderful job. You know, I'm really, really proud. We're very lucky. We have such talented cast, talented heads of department. We couldn't, you know, the vision is shared by everybody in the team. It's not just one element, you know. The story alone couldn't make Mad Fabulous. It needs a whole team of beautiful, invested, talented people who are crazy enough to go on a journey and believe in it, and who have the love to see it through.
Cool. Well, listen, best of luck with it. We hope it's a phenomenal success. 5th of June, hashtag Mad Fabulous, I believe.
Hashtag Mad Fabulous,
And hopefully we'll see you at the Iris Prize later on this year.
You'll see me at the Iris Prize. I'm really looking forward to coming back to Cardiff. I was a student in Cardiff. I was here for 4 years in the early 90s. So I need to come back and I need to explore a bit of the city again.
Cool. Ladies and gentlemen, lovely Lisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's the non-rude version, because I can't play the rude version on the air.
I'll be listening to it in the car on the way to my home.
That's flipping fabulous. That's Fabulous by Meek.
I love
M-W-E-K.
That.
Yeah, it was playing everywhere when we were over at the Irish Film Festival, but obviously because it kind of goes with the
does
film
it?
Too, yeah.
Subtly.
So I think it's just become your anthem, has it not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote the song.
Yeah.
I'm just really humble about it. No, I didn't, listeners, I did not write it.
So if Meek is listening, we're very sorry. She's pretending to be you.
I am just pretending. That was a great interview with Lisa Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. She was absolutely lovely. Yeah. You can see a photo of me with her up on the... I think if she'd have let me, we could have done like another like 30-40 minutes of it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
There was so much.
The two of them are just sat there nattering.
Yeah.
Nattering. How long is the film?
Two and a bit hours, I think.
You're supposed to be asking that when we're off air. I could talk.
Sorry.
I don't know.
I think it's about two and a bit hours.
Yeah.
Good length.
It's not normal film length. It's not.
Not like, you know, Lord of the Rings.
And it is an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, you'll either love him or you hate him, I think.
I hated him.
Well, I think there can be everything in between,
I didn't love what he did. It's just that you could tell towards the end there was a glimmer of remorse.
Yeah.
I think when it actually dawned on him what he'd done and the like, you know. I mean, the problem is it could also be the way that Callum plays him.
Yeah. But I'm a Scottish Presbyterian, so, you know.
I think just, you know, just on reading a little bit of the history, there were some sort of, although, you know, you could see it as him doing things for him, and absolutely, you know, because it was spectacular, and it was all about the performance and the art.
There was
a lot done there for other people because they enjoyed it, right?
But how do you communicate with people when you got that amount of money?
That's
the whole thing. Isn't it?
He starts off quite mild and it gets more and more and more, doesn't it? You know, and it's when he gets to that point that it all kind of
goes
wrong.
But there's no one to tell him off.
And irrespective, he was doing things that nobody was doing at all at the time. I mean, you know, performing Oscar Wilde when Oscar Wilde was going through what he was going through, it literally is Mad Fabulous. And
the locals loved him.
Yeah.
The whole way through and well afterwards, they absolutely loved him. So. But yeah, he did die quite young because he had what they call consumption, which we now call tuberculosis.
Yes.
You know, so I think he was 29. I think Lisa said there. Anyway, it's out on the 5th of June. Go see it. We're going to have a special shout out night out, I think, aren't we?
We will, definitely.
And go watch it ourselves. So. But that's it for this week. As we always say, if you've got an event or a story, or if you'd like to even get involved in the radio with us, check us out and get in touch.
Plus, all our shows are available as podcasts on all good services, as well as a website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
And you can even see the trailer for Mad Fabulous on our show page for today's show if you head to our website. website. Next week, Chuck. No idea what that is.
No.
We'll find out then. Say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.